The top stories from the KCBS Radio Newsroom. This is the All Local.
A record 89% of Americans now believe there is widespread government corruption. That's the highest level Gallup has measured in 20 years. And for more, we're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by KCBS political analyst Mark Sandalow. And Mark, I guess we shouldn't be surprised that most Americans just don't have a whole lot of trust in the government these days.
No, it almost makes you wonder who the 11% who told Gallup, no, I don't think there is any corruption in government, are. But part of this, Jason, is that the very different definitions of corruption. I mean, the most classic definition would be, say, bribing a public official. You know, you go to Nancy Pelosi, you say, I'll give you $1 million if you promise to pass this bill, which will help my business. If that were to be the case and she were caught, she would go to jail, you would go to jail. And by all objective measures, that sort of corruption is at a record low in American history right now. But by corruption, people mean other things. They also mean things like, how is it that Nancy Pelosi has become rich with stock investments? Not necessarily cheating, but perhaps it looks bad. Or much more extreme would be Donald Trump winning, earning $2.2 billion while in office last year. And there's a political scientist out there, Lawrence Lessig. He has a whole different view of corruption, which I think a lot of people buy, which is, he says, like, you take a magnet and you put it next to a compass, and the compass is supposed to point to the North Pole, but you put a magnet next to it, it points to the magnet. He would argue that is corrupting the true purpose of the magnet. Now, it's not illegal for people to give money to politicians, for example, but when you have people, whether it's Nancy Pelosi, Donald Trump, or all politicians, spending a great deal of their time raising money with rich donors trying to attract money to their causes, what Lessig argues is that's corrupting the true purpose of Congress and of the presidency, which is to help the American people. And I think when you simply go in, like Gallup did, and ask, is corruption widespread in our government? I think when you get all those definitions together, hardly surprising that virtually everybody says yes.
Are you surprised at all, Mark, that the suspicion is shared across political lines?
No, because, it's funny, I read some headlines on this, and they make it sound as if both parties see corruption in their own party. That's not what this asks. The question is only, is corruption widespread through our government? And the reason this has spiked is because when they asked the same question at the end of the Biden administration, something like 80% of Republicans said, yes, there's corruption. But only 57% of Democrats said that. Now that Trump is in office, over 90% of Democrats are saying there's corruption in government. Republicans haven't changed much, and that's why it has skyrocketed. So neither side is necessarily pointing fingers at one party or the other, but both parties are pointing the finger.
Mark, what kind of things rebuild trust in government and public institutions? And is that possible right now?
It's hard. I keep thinking of, remember the McCain-Feingold campaign finance bill, which was supposed to limit money in government. It was John McCain and a Democrat by the name of Russ Feingold from Wisconsin. Russ Feingold said money has no place in politics, and I'm not taking any money from corporations or from PACs. He was a senator from Wisconsin. And it was a very bold stance, and people said, you're going to lose your election if you say that. He said, look, I'm a principled guy, and people loved him. They said he wasn't corrupt, but he lost his election because he didn't have enough money to campaign. And the way the system is set up now, it's very, very difficult to succeed if you don't have some sort of financial backing. Again, that doesn't suggest that most American politicians are taking bribes. That's, quid pro quo, this for that sort of corruption. But it does suggest that money in the system sort of, by definition, corrupts the purpose of it. And I don't know what you do, except to have politicians like Russ Feingold willing to go out there and risk not being reelected.
And that does not seem to be the case right now in this political climate. Mark, thank you very much for joining us this morning. That's KCBS Ring Central Newsline, or KCBS political analyst Mark Sandalow. And we continue with Ask an Expert, and I believe we have John Kosner back, president of Kosner Media. We're talking about fantasy sports. John, thanks for joining us here this morning and getting through the gremlins. And looks like a lot of people are getting ready for their fantasy drafts this weekend. Let's talk about the rise of fantasy football. I didn't realize this. I've been playing it for a long time, but apparently it started all the way back in the 1960s.
You know, not only that, but this is of interest to fans in the Bay Area. It actually started in Oakland. According to the research I did, started 63 years ago, a gentleman named Bill Winkenbach, who is an entrepreneur in Oakland, started something called the GOPPPL, the Greater Oakland Professional Pigskin Prediction League. That first league included a famous NBA executive who I work with named Scotty Sterling, and the first player picked was Oakland Raiders legendary quarterback George Blanda. So there's a Bay Area connection to the launch of fantasy football, which obviously has become a huge enterprise since.
Now, more than 80 million people played fantasy sports last year in North America alone. And, you know, you not just football geeks like myself that are playing this. I mean, it's really spread beyond to many more people that are playing fantasy football and other fantasy sports.
Yes, and Labor Day weekend has emerged as the biggest weekend to run your fantasy draft. And fantasy is part of sports culture. So, you know, the most well-known fantasy sports for years was baseball. It debuted with something called the Rotary Baseball League in New York City in April of 1980. But football has supplanted baseball and everything else in fantasy, and it's become a really, really huge enterprise.
I started playing fantasy football the early 90s. Everybody would gather, would have two, three different magazines they'd be sifting through to get ready for the draft. And then came the internet. How has the birth of the internet changed the game over the past three decades?
So it's changed it radically. I worked at ESPN.com. I ran the website from 2003 to 2017. When I started in 2003, we had 300,000 fantasy football players. This year, ESPN will have over 14 million. One of the key architects of the growth is Matthew Berry, who goes by the talented Mr. Roto. He came to ESPN in 2006 with a playbook built around fantasy as part of popular culture. The internet enhanced fantasy materially. For one thing, all the stats were available. So when you first started playing, you probably were, you know, or your league manager was doing your stats by hand. Now all of that is done automatically. In addition, there are other stats and types of formulas that are available. Second, the advent of social media meant that you could share information, put leagues together much quicker. The development of mobile meant that you could take your fantasy experience, you could set your lineup anywhere. And then cloud computing really began to handle the issue which we dealt with in the old days of just load. In my first set of years at ESPN, you literally had to buy servers for data centers at this time of year, and then you were hoping that you wouldn't go down with the intense load at the end of the early NFL games. Now it's all managed through cloud computing. So a variety of ways that the internet has changed and enhanced fantasy football.
Our Ask an Expert today is John Kosner, president of Kosner Media, a digital media and sports consultancy. We're talking about the rise of fantasy football, the impact of prediction markets, too. We'll be getting to that. If you have a question you would like answered, please email us at askus@kcbsradio.com. John, prediction markets like Kalshi, Polymarket, they're now offering contracts on NFL outcomes. How is that different from a typical sportsbook bet, and how is that impacting fantasy sports?
Well, the prediction markets are managed by a different federal agency, the CFTC, as opposed to legalized sports betting, which is regulated state by state. If you place a bet with a traditional sports book, it could be DraftKings, it could be FanDuel, et cetera, you're wagering against the sports book. In the case of prediction markets, it's a peer-to-peer bet. So it's much different, and neither of them are what fantasy is. Fantasy is a season-long activity. That's what we're talking about with people drafting this weekend. And there's generally no wagering involved with it. Many leagues will create a pool, and then the pool will go to the winner at the end of the season. But the great thing about fantasy historically is that while it has elements and feels like betting in certain ways, for many other people, it's just a social activity that has built interest in the game. So big differences between fantasy and prediction markets, and big differences, obviously, between prediction markets and traditional sports books. That could be a whole segment on its own.
John, have the new prediction markets had an impact on fantasy, rather either positive or negative?
I think it's too early to tell. My contacts in fantasy sports tell me that the audience for fantasy continues to grow. So I don't think that it's made a difference. You know, you quoted a big number of people playing fantasy sports in North America. The number of people wagering on sports and or participating in prediction markets is quite larger still, but there is some overlap there. I don't see any indication at the moment that prediction markets have impacted or limited fantasy sports, in part because I think fantasy sports is a different, more social activity.
Do you think AI is playing a role now in fantasy sports? Might there be some fantasy managers that are going to get their AI chatbot to manage their teams for them?
Yeah, 100%. And if you go on Matthew Berry's site, which is called Fantasy Life, if you go on ESPN, you'll see that, you know, the top 10 players to be selected are remarkably similar. So every entity now is utilizing AI to make calculations and to determine draft order, et cetera. It's just another way in which technology sort of serves to undergird the sports activity. As we discussed earlier, the internet has had a profound impact on the growth of fantasy football. AI will as well.
How has the NFL and other professional sports embraced fantasy sports? Do they embrace it now as opposed to in the past where perhaps they might have ignored it?
They definitely embrace fantasy sports. And I think they've come to appreciate that it is an engagement vehicle for their fans and a reason. In the case of the NFL, it's a reason to have an interest on multiple games. Interestingly, and this is something I'm watching, as part of the NFL's acquisition of 10% of ESPN, which happened earlier in the year, the NFL fantasy game is now run by ESPN, and ESPN for the first time will be able to integrate NFL highlights into its game. I think that's a potential game changer in terms of the experience for fantasy players, meaning you could log in and or get alerts with highlights showing your players scoring as part of the day's tracking of your fantasy games. So leagues have seen the engagement value with their fans and with their media partners. And while they may have looked somewhat skeptically at fantasy 20 years ago, it's now central to the fan engagement strategy that all of them have.
John, we have a listener question wondering why football is the dominant fantasy sport and what are we seeing with basketball or the other major sports?
So the really big difference is that football is just easier to play and takes less time. You have to set your lineup once a week because the games are weekly, and it takes probably 10 minutes for somebody to set their lineups. There's a randomness to the game because of injuries and stars that emerge that allows anybody who's paying attention to be competitive. The NBA, MLB, NHL are season-long leagues where you really have to focus on nightly games, and it benefits really intense players who are doing a lot of research. We used to say that the receptionist had as good a chance to win our fantasy football league as someone who is actually working on the product. So I think ease of use, limited amount of time necessary, and just frankly, that the NFL is by far the most popular sport in our country.
John, I'm sure you know some folks. I know people that they have multiple fantasy teams. It must be really hard for those folks to keep track of all those different leagues. And is that a popular thing? A lot of players just have many teams and many leagues?
Yes, yeah, but that's also the beauty. That's also the beauty of the internet and mobile applications where you can keep everything straight, where you can now, I'm sure some players are now using agents to revise their rosters, et cetera. So those are power players. I think most of us will have a league or two, and the beauty of it has been just the social experience of it.
All right, John, I'm going to put you on the spot. We got the draft coming up this weekend for a lot of folks. What should longtime fantasy managers be watching for?
Rules are always kind of the same. You're looking for running backs, wide receivers early, and then you'll go to quarterbacks. There are a bunch of Detroit Lions and Rams and receivers from the Seattle Seahawks that will go. It's fascinating. If you look at the top fantasy sites, who they're recommending 1 through 10 or 1 through 15 is all pretty similar. My big recommendation is pay attention to the results and then hit your waiver wires or your free agents as soon as games are done, because there are always players who emerge who we haven't heard of who can become big fans, who can become big stars.
Always a diamond in the rough to be found. John, thank you very much for joining us here today, and good luck on your fantasy draft.
Thank you, Jason.
All right, John. That's John Kozner, president of Kozner Media, a digital media and sports consultancy.
Subscribe to the All Local wherever you get your podcasts, and stream us on your smart speaker 24/7 by saying, play KCBS Radio.